Welcome to the Colorado Review podcast, featuring prose and poetry from both recent and archived issues of the journal. Once a month, we take a look at content from a new issue and invite the author to read and discuss their recent work. My name is Kylan Rice, and I'm joined today by Jenny Dre, whose poems appear in the summer 2016 issue of Colorado Review. Jenny Dre, thank you so much for joining me today. It's a pleasure to have you with me speaking about the most recent summer 2016 issue of Colorado Review.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Now, Jenny, you've got three poems featured in this issue, and each of them are titled, if I'm correct, each of them have identical titles. That is Lullaby, Hush.
Exactly.
And I wonder... if there is anything an audience member or a listener might be interested to know before we hear you read these poems, I wonder if you might offer that now.
Sure. They were written as part, there's two more of these Lullaby House poems, and they were written as a way to join together some other pieces that I had all written kind of in a binge writing whatever, over a month or two. And basically, I live in Germany. I'd been to Paris on vacation. We visited the catacombs. I'd been to, also in Cologne, which is near Bonn where I live, to the Golden Chamber in the St. Ursula's Basilica. And I'm sure most people have heard of the catacombs, but the Golden Chamber is similar to the catacombs in that it is just a lot of human bones. In the Golden Chamber, they are decorated. They're used to decorate and spell words and to make art, kind of. And the thing that was in the back of my mind as I was writing these poems that were used to link together these other pieces was that it's a combination of feeling a kind of disgust at being surrounded by human remains, and at the same time, being really aware that each of these bones belong to like an individual person, and that each individual person represents a set of human wishes. And so as I was writing these poems, I was thinking, I think, of a singing to the idea of humans wishing through time, through history, to each other.
I love that. And I love that the bone is the site of this wish, or certainly the token of this wish. Kind of a wishbone.
That's true. I didn't even think of that.
Yeah. Well, lovely. Thank you. Now, Jenny, I wonder if you might read for us these three poems.
Sure. Thank you. Lullaby, Hush. Sweet girl. Once was girl. Scent of cherry blossom in a basin of cool water. What we talk about when we talk about bones. You are your fiercest mouth. Send me all your names at once, I'll bend you to your deepest corner. Many sorrows. Well, sure, that's life. Plus a sparrow of joy flitting in a loose throat, plunging forth from between the rows of tea-stained teeth. Going to do it, going to hold us together, expansive. When we talk about holding ourselves together for the next fight, the second long duration, swill in your mouth those words I couldn't believe, not wanting, not to listen, swelling warmth, sweetness, that girl hovering in the mirror light, the ample time. Enough for all of us together, then, not enough. Also, talking about separation. What cleaves to bone but skin, ligament, muscle, tape, walking past gardens and walls. Into paradise, which is earth note, this hall. Stop now before too late comes and sucks you up with tendrils of late dew moisture. Stop while time allows you to start again. Of all my wishes, this wish for you, hallow. Sweet girl, the seasons turn. Your shadow, stop the passage. Tell the world and mark the date. Your shadow like a laser point dotting the increment of all other shadows like it. That's when you yell stop and everybody hears you. Console roar. Stop selling yourself short. Stop drawing the short straw. My waiting for you is a bent bow in this idle bower, so you can go to sleep right now if you want to. Agreed. We don't want to. Stop listening to the mood, the voices of others. Our bones of their own accord, ribs like drumsticks and what sticks to them, sallow feet. You and I are the bones. You and I are the shiny gilt mirror and the gold frame with whirring lion's heads at the top and center. You and I are floating in on a slip of folded paper across the surface of the aforementioned basin of water. In other words, not stopping. Not in this me growing into you and wondering about our shared history. Unusual, considering the circumstances. Not in this me breaking my collarbone in the soccer mat, grim lines of pain, but keep playing. Keep sorting it out. Never in this our place and now, our then was different, but often in what we draw now in our shadow. The crisp air in these forgotten drawers where I find the old photographs, stop, don't look, look away. We cannot know what you are seeing, dead relatives. Dead time. Grown into the present day and month, this mark, I sweetly ply my trade, lying and telling the truth equally. If time exists at all, it does and it doesn't. Because I do know what I am seeing, and it's not a cup of strong tea, not a curved spine, but featherlight. Time like stains, or like whispers in a corridor. Stop. Lullaby, hush. Seven lights, a mountain in the distance, a drink, flavors of star anise. When I comb your thread of hair, I weep every time. Because you're sweaty gold. Tremble all along the burnished band, this crown, and savor all of us as one insight. Many of us are singing the bone song. Many of us, breathing of us, breaking off as would a damaged hair, dried out, split-ended, but saving ourselves in the end like crushed red glass. Garnet red, the rim of the glass on the flesh wood table. Simple math, if I could rub me out or you could you. Seven lights again, shining brightly. Stop. Stay here a while with me under these eaves. Singing softly our tired bone song, one simple octave. Lullaby, hush. I select. The longest tune, easing into notes, whistling air, pulse lungs. No one is graceful who is indecently happy or pitifully distressed. It is wrong to wish for it. Your human bone, song, a levy. My brow, my chin, into the air with our troubles, like a light point out, which is where I come from, the opposite of the shortest kind of love, the grapple, delicate stick. Maybe you saw me do it, or maybe you were already gone, rolling green lawn, up stone stairs, into the house. I sit in a chair, and you sit in the same chair, and we talk about the weather, which is dumb. A low heat soars in our faces. Backlit. Stop. Everything I do is for you.
Thank you so much, Jenny.
No problem.
There's a deep anxiety, I feel like, at the heart of these poems, or certainly a deep thinking happening about time, about shared history, about intimacy across time and across space. And I just love how this first lullaby hush ends, lying and telling the truth equally if time exists at all. It does and it doesn't, because I do know what I am seeing, and it's not a cup of strong tea, not a curved spine, but feather-light time like stains. So, I mean, there's this lovely way in which the poem acknowledges at the end that that it, even in trying to witness to another, as you were saying, another that might exist deep in history, even in that attempt, there is a lying and telling the truth at the same time. I wonder if you could just talk about the difficulties or the successes of the poem generally, as it is able to maybe speak to or witness to other people, either as they exist near us or far from us, you know, in time or in space.
So that's all I have to say. I use the second person singular sometimes, I think, in these poems. Yeah, you. And for me, that's a way, I'm not just acknowledging the other, it's also a way, I think, of writing, addressing, like, the other within the self. Mm. So parts of the self that are unavailable or difficult to access or whatever. And so I think a lot, I think of writing in general, and maybe poetry specifically, as a way to, it's like, it's building a space where negotiation can happen. So we're talking about, I don't know, I've just always been interested in actual history. So always talking about history, and specifically interested in women's lives through history and how little can be known about the daily lives. I mean, much can be known and very little can be known at the same time about the daily lives of people living through history. And that's where we get back to what I was talking about, the catacombs and the golden chamber in the St. Ursula's Basilica in Cologne, is just being overwhelmed by the presence of so many humans throughout history and throughout time that are absolutely unknowable to me. And feeling, however, on some level, wanting to know that unknowableness, I guess,
right,
is how I describe it. And writing towards that somehow, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, yeah, you do use this word shared history at some point. It's almost to me that, you know, it's not, the efforts of these poems isn't only to kind of do a kind of like speculative genealogy, but it's an attempt to, like, you know, this other phrase right above the line that has shared history in it, you know, me growing into you. There's this beautiful way in which these poems want to inhabit multiple bodies. And I wonder if that's something that was on your mind as you were writing them.
Very much so. In the sense that these poems are part of and indicative of a larger project, I guess I'm thinking, when I say shared history, I'm thinking of history as this alive thing that we're all in together, like in the same sense that we're all in our bodies.
Mm.
We're all in a location. I think the sense that we have of our individual locations is probably the real sixth sense. But I think history consists of the connections and events that occur when individual bodies collide, and there's maybe more of a sense of not just being, but being in time and through time. So what you're saying about this nut and this me growing into you, I think in general, like when I write, because I like to dabble in history a lot in my other writing as well, and in the poems that exist between the poems that these lullaby, his hush poems, we're joining together in this project I'm working on. There's a lot of, I guess I would call it like self-season or something, like seizing the speaker, which is a standard for myself, to be honest, into other either historical or hagiography, I can't say the word.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, in a sense to learn something about the self, to learn something about the present day, perhaps, about one's own autobiography, like to view it in the lens of this has happened so many times before. This is not unique to my situation. This has happened throughout history. The more things change, the more they stay the same, is actually kind of illuminating, I think.
You know, and it's a deep, I don't know, it's a deep process of love, it seems to me, this kind of, or a deep process of empathy, which I think leads to a kind of love. And then in the last lullaby, Hush, there's this phrase, where I come from, the opposite of the shortest kind of love, the grapple, delicate fit. You know, there's this way in which that last lullaby, Hush, acknowledges in that sort of sequence, the kind of opposite of the shortest kind of love that these poems are attempting to achieve through history and through bodies through history. And it's a really beautiful effort that results in a kind of profound intimacy. At least it's a kind of intimacy that I as a reader am picking up on. And I think it was so remarkable to me to hear that these poems sprang from, you know, a place of relative temporal distance, you know, these catacombs and basilicas. And yet there's something so close and almost erotic about the ways that these poems unfold. You know, this address to this sweet girl, if not erotic, certainly at least maternal or familial. I just am curious if you could talk for a moment about, for instance, the ways in which these poems might be compared to the Obad, I'm thinking, for instance, the way that like these poems want to stop or halt or slow or delay the parting of another person from the speaker. Do you know this tradition, the Obad tradition, sort of the dawn song?
The dawn song.
And these poems, I mean, a word that emerges often in the context of the intimacy that's being produced here is this word stop. You know, this word stop, it wants to halt time somehow, in the same way that an obad or a dawn song wants to halt time before the intimate other departs from them. I wonder if you could just, and you don't have to necessarily pick up this line that I'm leaving concerning the obad, but I wonder if you could just talk for a moment about the desire that these poems have to stop in time, perhaps.
Sure. I would say that in my writing life and in my life in general, there's a desire to connect as well as to like be off on my own, I suppose. And I think the stop, it's like acknowledging, I want to say there's an acknowledgement, like what you said, I'm looking at the line, the opposite of the shortest kind of love. There's an acknowledgement that reaching out, you know, existing in love, and I don't mean romantic love, of course, but mm-hmm. existing in love is an energetic process, I think. And so there's almost like this desire to keep going in it, but at the same time to stop and preserve the self, I think. I don't know if that's really answering your question.
Oh, yeah.
And I think also, just with these poems in particular, there were two, there are two saints, Saint Barbara and Saint Ursula, that I was reading about and interested in as I was writing some other stuff that was kind of being written around the same time as these poems were read. And they are both fake people. Mm. Like, they probably never existed. And so for me, these poems and yet there's so much of a body of work and a body of tradition around both these people who never existed.
Oh, interesting.
And so there's just like this desire to interrogate how much has to exist in order for something to be real, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I'm, So in a way, it's an interrogation of how we structure reality, too, I think. I'm not really talking about the dawn songs. I mean, I never thought of these poems in that sense before, so that was kind of a new thought to me, to be honest.
Yeah.
It's a nice thought. I like it.
Well, you know, I'm just thinking, for instance, I've been reading a lot of Ezra Pound lately, and Pound was somebody who was really informed by the troubadour tradition, and he was, you know, really interested in the dawn song. He was really interested in the obad, in poems apart from, you know, his cantos. And Pound was one of those people who also thought a lot about history. He thought a lot about, and he thought a lot about love and love in history. And so I'm really enjoying thinking about your poems as articulations of this juncture between love and history. And, you know, how much, you know, of the past has to exist for something to be real, as you were saying, or something to be lovable, really. And, you know, again, this line, the opposite of the shortest kind of love, it, you know, it's a witness to me that love happens across time. And it's an energy across time. And somehow that energy in these poems is beautifully translated into a kind of mattering, a kind of body. And that's where these bones sort of shoot out across time in this really beautiful and imaginative way in these poems. But again, this is just my sort of idiosyncratic reading of these offerings of yours.
I like your reading. I was just going to add that I think if, you know, we talk about history or time, really, you know, it's this thing where we're stuck in even as we're moving through it. So, and maybe they're in some ways joyfully stuck in it, in some ways sorrowfully stuck in it.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe that really informs something behind the writing of these poems as well.
Absolutely. Well, Jenny Dre, thank you so much for having this conversation with me. I'm leaving enlightened, so I appreciate that.
Thank you. Thank you for having the conversation with me and giving me stuff to think about as well.
You've been listening to the Colorado Review podcast, which can be found at iTunes and at the Colorado Review website. Also online, you can find selections from recent and archived issues of the journal, blog posts, reviews, and much more. This podcast is made possible by Colorado State University and the Center for Literary Publishing. Thanks for listening.